not point the camera at you. That is both a joke and in all seriousness. So, thank you, Joe. No, thank you. No, you're looking good. We want to thank our sponsors, Torch, and the Synagogue, and Mr. Rafi Benjaminov for sponsoring tonight's event. And without further ado, Rabbi Wolbe.
So, good evening, everybody. Welcome. Thank you all for coming. It is an awesome privilege to have you all here today and to have the wonderful Rabbi Mizrahi with us. It turns out that although I knew Rabbi Mizrahi was very, very famous, I came to visit my parents in Muncie, and behold, Rabbi Mizrahi is in shul with me. He lives right next door to my parents, and it was very, very nice to meet him there. And we have, every time I go to visit my parents, I tell him, Nuru, why don't we bring you to Houston? So thank you, Baruch Hashem, you're here, and we're very grateful. Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to it. Before we begin, I want to thank Rabbi Yacobian. Thanks already. It's always a pleasure doing a partnership with Torah V'Chesed and Rabbi Yacobian, because I find that about 24 hours in advance, so it's perfect. So thank you. That's a lot of time, right? I want to thank Joel, and I want to thank Rafi Benjamino for an incredible workmanship, working together. Just want for 1 second to talk a little bit about Torch. As you walk outside on your way out, you may see these, or you may see these. This is the Torch campaign. You can take one on your way out, or you can take the Torch to the store. You see other programs. There are dozens of programs every week. You're welcome to join us. There are also these CDs. There are also these CDs, right? These you might want to take home, right? These are Rabbi Mizrahi. You're welcome to take them with you on your way out. So are the Torch ones that are available for you. But even more so, on your way out, you'll see this on the way going out. You'll see these little cards. Please, if you'd like to join any program, this is an opportunity. You fill out this card, we will follow up with you. There's a choice of different classes. Just check it off with your name, and we'll contact you with the upcoming program that you're interested in joining. Without any further ado, it's a privilege to call Rabbi Mizrahi.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. As you know, I just arrived from the airport. Just landed half an hour ago. There was a delay, unfortunately, but better late than never. So if you waited for me, I apologize. We will speak about an interesting topic tonight. Just like the rabbi said before, you can feel free to take some of my CDs. Thank you. Some of my CDs right here. Baruch Hashem, they're very interesting CDs. There's about 30 hours of lecture on each one of them. It goes by number from 1 to 11, and there's other series of lectures. But I warn you that it's a little bit addictive. You may find yourself in a car because it's MP3. So, Baruch Hashem. So tonight we'll speak about something that every Jew must know. Not only Jews, the whole world has to know that. But the priority right now is to inform every Jew, and Baruch Hashem, many of you came here, you know, first time I'm in Houston, I was in Dallas in the past, but first time I'm here to meet this community. We have to know what does it mean to be a Jew, and what's really the difference between Judaism to all the other religions and cults who are all over the world. If you really search in the entire world, you find so many different cults and religions, 7 billion people, and only 13.2 million of them are Jews. It's almost impossible to believe such thing, that from 7 billion people, the Jews are only 0.018% from the world, and actually they are the ones who you hear about the most. You hear about the Jews probably more than all the other 80,000 religions and cults combined. Which doesn't make any sense. Why would the whole world would be busy with Israel and the Jews and all kinds of things when the Jews are not even 1% of the population in the world? Doesn't make sense, no? We will understand that in a few minutes. But before, we have to give a little bit background of some of our history. According to the Torah that was given to us, in front of millions of witnesses, the world is 5,773 years old. Now I know what's on your mind. You are influenced by many books or articles or lectures that you watched in your life that the world is millions of years old or billions of years old. But according to the Torah, and I can be proven in few minutes, but that's not our topic right now. In case you are wondering, you're going to my website. I posted over there a lecture, a film by an American scientist. If I'm not mistaken, he's here from Texas. His name is Robert Gentry, non-Jew. And he proves that the world is only a few thousand years old, and he takes every one of the claims that the scientists claim that the world is millions of years old, and he proves that the world is only a few thousand years old. He speaks about everything you ever heard about, and he proves that none of it, it's a proof. It's all theories, all speculations. There are two kinds of science in the world, objective science and speculative science. The difference is, when it comes to objective science, it can be proven immediately and nobody can argue that because everyone sees the facts. If you repeat some transaction 1,000 times and always it comes with the same results, that's already a scientific proof. You know that it's always working. But when you estimate and you assume and you put them together, all the assumptions that you make, and based on that you build the fact, and then you come to school and you teach the student that the world is millions of years old and we came from the monkeys based on a theory of Darwin, which actually was completely destroyed by his followers and his student because they came to a dead end, so they had to re-modify the entire theory. So we see that all these theories, there's millions of theories. If you want to believe theories, it's up to you. You can follow the theories and base your life based on theories. I'm not here to talk about theories. I'm only here to talk about facts, as you're going to see soon. So the Torah is different than all the 80,000 religions and cults. What's different about the Torah? The Torah, it's the only book that was given to a nation in front of millions of witnesses. Let me explain. Speaking about Islam, about 1,400 years ago, a person named Muhammad came and he claimed that Angel Gabriel gave him the Quran. How many witnesses he had that he gave him the Quran? Not even one. It's his story. Not one person ever witnessed that event. He himself admits that he was alone. So he comes and tells us a story that he received this book from an angel named Gabriel. How did he know the name Gabriel? He comes from the Torah. Why Muhammad would use a name from a Jewish book if he wants to start a new religion? Why would he use a name from an angel that belongs to the Jewish nation, the three angels of the Jewish nation according to the Torah? The answer is, the Christians and the Muslims never claimed that the Jews never received the Torah. The opposite, they're backing it up 100%, 1,000%. Never in history, none of them, whether they like the Jews or not, that's besides the point. But they always stuck to that fact that the Jews received the Torah in a public event and God spoke to Moses in front of millions of people and everyone heard that dialogue. Why, when they come to invent a new religion, why would they continue from Judaism? It's better to put a big X on Judaism and say it was all false, all nonsense. This is the truth. Everything they told you until now, it's nonsense. Here is the real truth, and finished. The answer is, it would be exactly like me coming here today and claiming there was no September 11. If I come now and say, ladies and gentlemen, everything you know about September 11, the twins collapsed, the terrorist attack, the planes who collapsed, the six other buildings who fell, it was all nonsense. It never happened. It's a story. Anyone would take me serious? No one would even listen to the rest of my words. Why? Because I already proved that I'm not exactly smart claiming such a claim. It would be a lot easier to say, of course, it happened, we all saw it. But then to make a sharp turn into the direction that I'm interested to take you to, which means I am the new prophet. There were many prophets until now, starting from Moses, and then all the Jewish prophets, and even Christianity is fine, Muhammad say. And now I'm the last prophet, and he gave me the Quran, and I'm the leader. And everyone who would not listen to me will be killed by sword. And that's how Islam started. It started to go from one tent to the other by the Arab tribe in the desert. And those who refused to accept his prophecy, supposedly, he got killed. So there, he didn't leave them that much of a choice. You with me or you dead? And that's how it started. And today we have about 1.5 billion people following this religion. We'll be back to it soon. What about Christianity? 2,000 years ago, a Jewish woman named Miriam get engaged to a Jewish person named Yosef. Yosef and Miriam, they got engaged. But not an engagement like today, he bought her a ring and some flowers and they made l'chaim. No. The engagements, according to the Torah, Nahara Meorasa, it's 100% a married woman. She already had a chuppah, everything, 100%. The only difference between that to Nahara Nesua, Eshet Ish, to Nahara Meorasa, is one level, one more step. What is it? That they did not move into the house and had intimate relation yet. Which means the custom of those days were you get engaged, you get married, you put the ring on the finger, they make the ketubah, everything is ready. That's it, you're married already. No one can, you cannot go with anybody else. He goes for a few months and he comes back, he brings enough money and you build your home. You didn't need $10 million to build a home, not even $1 million, not even $100,000. You build a home with few helpers. They come, they take some trees, and they build homes. It was very, very simple those days. But you still need some money. That period took a few months. The husband would come back with enough money, and they build their homes. When Yosef the carpenter came home, he found out that his wife, even though he never touched her, she's already in a progressive pregnancy. So he asked her, what happened? So she said, you really suspect that I cheated? That's what you think of me? This is in the first page in the New Testament. God came to me in a dream, and he made me pregnant. And this son will be holy and all kinds of stories. And now he had two options. One option to report her to the authorities. And in those days, a woman who cheated would get an execution punishment with no mercy. Whether she was Jewish or not Jewish, doesn't matter. Everyone understood that is a severe sin. It's not like today, they put her on television and give her gifts. You know, it's a different world 2,000 years ago. So, in those days, he only had two options. One, to report her and lose his love. And one, to pretend that he believes. So he moved in, and they moved in, and then later they had JC. JC was born. He went to yeshiva, he put tefillin, he went to, you know, the whole story, like all Jewish boys. And he died. One day he died as a Jew. Did JC start Christianity? Absolutely not. JC made himself a cult. He collected all the homeless people, all the people who had no rabbis, no yeshiva, no community. Jews and some non-Jews, and he made himself in a cult, and he was their preacher. He gives them, you know, some speeches. And between 70 to 300 years after he died, there's different opinions, but at least 70 years after he died, Christianity started by stories of the evangelists, Matthew, Luke, Mark, John. It's people who never saw ever JC. They don't even know if he really existed. It's like me telling you stories about the grandfather of my grandfather in Iraq 100 or 150 years ago. You want to believe me, fine. You don't want to believe me, fine. Most likely, I myself don't know anything about him. Whatever I'll sell you, you're going to buy. And that's the end of the story. In the beginning, Christianity kept the Sabbath and also the circumcision. When they saw that for a long period of time, this cult does not grow. It's not going anywhere. There's no really future for it. They came to the Romans, and they said to the Romans, you have no religion. Why don't you join us? The Romans say, we don't believe in damaging the body. This barbaric custom of circumcision, it's not for us. And also, we don't believe in wasting time. We believe in working around the clock. And you have a day off, it's not for us. So the Christians say to them, if we'll cancel those two commandments, would you join us? They say yes, and that was the deal between them. And all of a sudden, it became a huge religion. Why? Millions of Romans joined them. And today it's close to 2 billion people, even though there's different kinds of Christianity, many differences between them. But this is the story of Christianity. Going back to the story. How many witnesses saw that God came to Miriam in a dream to Mary and spoke to her and made her pregnant? Not even one. There's not one witness. It's a story of someone who had all the reasons in the world to lie to save her life. She had a serious incentive to make up a story before she would be executed. So she made up that lie. That lie worked, and today we see the results of it. But the point is, not one person can witness a dream of a woman. Not one person. The Torah, the same thing Buddhism. 2,400 years ago, a person named Buddha claimed he saw the light, spiritual light. What was this light? Nobody really knows. He claimed that he saw a spiritual revelation, he saw the light, and people started to follow him as supposedly a holy person. How many people saw that Buddha saw the light? What exactly Buddha gave them from God? Nothing. It's Buddhism have hundreds of millions of people. Hinduism, it's a religion that is following all kinds of idol worshiping, amazing idol worshiping. If you see some of the movies of what they worship, you won't believe that it's possible that people would worship such thing. But they never brought anything from God. They don't claim they have a connection to the creator of the world and he told them to do what they do. They have all kinds of beliefs in all kinds of people. They have heroes in India, and those heroes, in one hand they're merciful, the other hand they're murderers. They have all kinds of names of their heroes, and that's basically their religion. What's the difference between Judaism to all these religions and cults who came after? First, the first serious religion is Judaism. Yes, in the time of Abraham, 200-300 years before the Torah described that everyone was idol worshippers. People worshiped the sun, the moon, the stars, animals, all kinds of worshipings. But there was no authentic official religion, nothing yet. The Torah was given to the Jews. Millions of Jews heard the voice of God speaking to the nation of Israel. How do I know it? Maybe someone fooled us. I don't like, with me, belief doesn't work, only proofs. So if someone tell me a story, right away I go and I check it. Even when it comes to Judaism, if somebody comes and say to me, Chazal say, the sages say, I always ask, show me the source, and believe it or not, 20-30% of the time, the source is not exactly as the person claimed. You always have to check the source. And how valid is the source? Yeah, you can have a lot of sources, but who knows this, who say the source is valid? So the answer is, when we open the Quran, there is one rule when you come to examine a religious book. When you claim that God gave this book, like the Quran, they claim God gave it. They claim Judaism is part one and Islam part two, and Christianity is the New Testament is part two, and come Muhammad at part three. So it's all from the same God, which means there should not be any contradictions between the books. If it's the same writer, he remembers dates, he remembers names, he doesn't make foolish human errors like we can do. Even us, if you know Torah enough, it's very unlikely to make mistakes. But if you open the Quran, and the Quran say God gave the land to the Jewish people. He took them out of Egypt. Pharaoh and his advisor were wicked people. God came, took the chosen people and Musa, which is Moshe, Moses, same person. He took them to the promised land and the Torah, it's holy. All these verses are in the Quran. I always say, if I would be the prime minister for one day instead of Benjamin Netanyahu, the arguments about Israel would be over in 1 hour. I would go to the United Nations and I would stand on there over there and I would say to all the Arabs members there, and there are plenty of them there, I would say to them, what's the holiest book in your eyes in the world? They would say the Quran. So very good. So who gave the Quran? They would all scream, Allah. Who is Allah? The creator of the world. They say, yes. So if the creator of the world says something, all people in the world must listen to him. Or only if you feel like it. They say, no, you must listen to him. You're not allowed to move an inch from what he said. Then I would open the Quran and show them about 15 sources in the Quran that shows, first, that the Torah is more reliable than the Quran. Muhammad said to his followers, if you have a doubt about my book, go to the Jews and check in the Torah. This is the book that was given first and is more reliable. It's a verse in the Quran. It says in the Quran that God blessed the Jewish people. And he took them to Israel and he gave them the Holy Land. Actually, I yesterday got an email from a Muslim professor from Algeria. I get a lot of those almost every week. And he wrote to me that there's no question that the land, the Holy Land, belongs to the Jews. And every Muslim who claims otherwise is not sticking to the text. So I wrote to him, if all Muslims would be like you, the problems in the world wouldn't be so big. I mean, they would stick to the text. But they say whatever they want, and they try to match the text to their agenda. That's not the way you go. If you have a divine book, you have to surrender to what the book says, because this is God against you. You cannot go your way. You have to go his way. All right? So according to them, I would show right away in the United Nations, and the arguments will be over for good. They will never know what to do after that. The whole world will be in shock. But the Israeli politicians, with all due respect, never read the Torah once in their life. Never. I promise you that. Except few religious ones that sits in the Knesset, every other secular member in the Knesset, and almost every other Israeli secular in Israel, about 6-7 million of them, never read the Torah once in their life. Of course, they give bombastic speeches against the Torah, and they pretend they're expert, but if you connect them to a lie detector, I promise you won't find one of them who read the Torah once from the beginning to the end that can explain the literal meanings of the words. Forget about the secrets, all the hidden secrets, all the oral laws, everything. Torah, it's a very complicated unit. But even just to explain the meaning of the words in the Torah, none of them knows. And you know what? I'll make a better deal than you. Even take a professor for Tanakh that teach in a high school, and you tell him to explain the meaning of the words, almost none of them would know the meaning, just the simple meanings of the words. And of course, they speak against Judaism, against the Torah, and we will understand later why they have the urge to criticize the Torah so much when they never read and they don't know exactly what's in it. But we go back to what we started. So, in the Quran, it described that Haman and Pharaoh had a meeting. How did they know about those two people? They read in the Torah that the Jews were in Egypt. Pharaoh was the king. How long ago was that? 3,400 years ago. And then they read in the Tanakh, in the Esther scroll, Megillat Esther, that there was King Ahasuerus in Persia when the Persians became the empire in the world about 2,400 years ago. And then he had an advisor. His name was Haman. He was a wealthy, wicked person. And now the writer of the Quran took two figures. He took Pharaoh and he took Haman, and he wanted to create a fake story. There's only one problem. When the last Pharaoh died, only 1,000 years later, Haman was born. So there's no way in the history that Pharaoh and Haman met each other. This is a human error in the Quran that obviously a person that had a little bit knowledge in the Tanakh would not make. I'll give you another example. According to the Quran, the mother of JC, she is the sister of Moses, which means Moses is the uncle of JC, according to the Quran. Did you ever hear more ridiculous mistake in a book that claimed to be the book of God? Moses lived 3,350 years ago. The JC was a little bit less than 2,000 years ago. His mother Miriam, she was 2,000 years ago. The sister of Moses, her name was also Miriam. They made a mistake between two Miriams. The prophet Miriam, the sister of Aaron and Moses, became the mother of JC, according to the Quran. Mariam bat Amram. It says in the Quran, what did you do? You brought us this baby. Your father wasn't a wicked man. And your mother wasn't an immodest woman. What is going on here? You're not married. You came. The same Miriam, they mix between her. This is mistakes that if I take my little son in first grade and I say to him, I want you to fake a story, he would not make such mistakes. We see the person who wrote the Quran, his knowledge in the history and then Torah and the Tanakh was very, very limited. That's why there's so many mistakes over there. Now let's talk a little bit about the New Testament. The New Testament, it's books that started, as I say to you, 70 to 300 years after JC died. JC never started a new religion. As a matter of fact, if you open the book Matthew, it says in Matthew, it's very interesting what it says over there. JC says like this, I'm not coming to contradict the Torah. They claim in the name of JC that that's what he said. So according to them, let's see in 2 minutes why Christianity cannot be valid. In 2 minutes, you don't need to argue, just to listen to the facts. Based on their books, we're not even talking based on the Torah, based on their own books. It says over there, JC said to his follower, I do not come to contradict the Torah. I only came to fulfill. If heaven and earth will be canceled, will be destroyed, no one will be still allowed to change one letter from the Torah, even a part of the letter. If anyone would change one of the commandments of the Torah and will teach to other otherwise than the way it is, will be cursed by the kingdom of heaven, which means all of you, my followers, must keep all the laws of the Torah. Now, do you know one Christian today in the world, include the Pope, one of them who keeps even one mitzvah from the Torah? Show me one Christian who keeps mitzvot from the Torah. They keep the Sabbath? No. They eat kosher? No. They keep the laws of Nida? No. They put tefillin? They pray 3 times a day? Whatever. They slaughter the animals as the way the Torah described? No. Nothing. Not one mitzvah from the 613 they keep. But JC, that's his will to his followers. If this is your hero, if this is what you claim is the Son of God, if you claim he's the Messiah, if you claim he's the most important person in history, according to them, you must listen to at least some of what he says. What does he say in Matthew? Matthew 5, verse 17 to 19. Remember the source. It's recorded. Matthew 5, verse 17 to 19. JC says, I do not come to contradict the Torah. I only came to fulfill. It means to explain to you. No one is allowed to change one commandment from the Torah. You ask the Christians, how do you handle this verse? There's a few verses here in the name of JC. There's no answer. They don't know where to hide. But it gets a lot worse. The New Testament begins. The reason I tell you all this, not that I claim that you want to convert to Christianity or Islam. I only do it because soon when I prove to you how do you know the Torah is divine, then you will see that with the same way I'm criticizing books and prove that it's human books, not divine, the same way I prove that our book is 100% divine. By finding one human error in a book, that's an indication that this book was not given by God. Because God does not make mistakes. Even if the rest of the book is beautiful, with lots of knowledge about nature, about whatever, geography, but once there is a human error somewhere in a book, you can never rely on this book again. Remember this rule. Because by us people, we make mistakes. If I write a book now and it's going to be the bestseller, and a year later someone will find a mistake there, no one will hang me. No one would stone me to death. Okay, people make mistakes. Human error. The date wasn't correct. The genealogy, you skip one generation. No problem, I'm a human being. And the next edition, I'll fix it. But when it comes to a divine book, there's no chance for second mistake. One mistake and the book became nothing. Piece of paper. So now, the New Testament begins describing the genealogy all the way from King David to Joseph the carpenter. Why is it? Why the writer of the evangelists, the New Testament, why he started the New Testament with this genealogy, the generations all the way from King David to Joseph the carpenter? What's the connection to King David? Why not to Abraham? Why not to Moses? Why only to King David specifically? The answer is, Christianity claim that it's true. The Jews received the Torah in front of millions of witnesses. God gave it to them. We witnessed that. We know it. It was in our days before we became Christian. So there's no way to deny it. However, God gave another book, which means it's part two. So now, we want to claim that JC is the Messiah. And the Torah already said clearly, Mashiach ben David. Messiah, son of David. That's it. A verse in the Torah, the Messiah must come from the family of King David, which means he has to be righteous, he has to be holy, he has to be decent, but that's not enough. If you have all the skills, but you're not from a family of King David, you cannot be the Messiah. You can only be the Messiah if you have all the skills I mentioned, plus you come from the family of King David. Otherwise, there's nothing to talk about. So now they're trying to describe that Joseph the carpenter is a grandson of King David. So far, no problem. You go about more than 30 generations over there in their book, and then they arrive to Joseph. And then the story begins. Joseph went away, and he came back after a few months, and he saw that his wife is pregnant. And he asked what happened. She said, believe me, I didn't cheat. God came to me and made me pregnant. So far, that's the story in the New Testament. So who is the mother of JC? Mary. Everyone saw where he came from. Good. Who's the father? You ask the Pope or any priest. Who's the father? They'll say God. Son of God. God made her pregnant. Is God is a grandson of King David? Of course not. So why did he waste a page and a half to link Joseph the carpenter to King David when right in the next page you wrote that he has nothing to do with the kid? Such ridiculous mistake. Even first grade student would not make such mistake. Here, in front of you, I brought you, maybe I didn't bring enough. Don't push after. But you can see it online, everything, or you have, if you have an app, all my lectures are free. I brought you a DVD of a 3 hours debate that I had with a Christian professor in New York 4.5 years ago. It's already had more than 1 million views, and hundreds of Christians already converted to Judaism. 7 priests left big churches after they saw it. Not only that, not many of you knows that the previous Pope that resigned, the reason that he resigned is not me, but it's Judaism. It's Rav Yaakov Ades. There's a big tzaddik in Yerushalayim that wrote a book, and they translated it to English, to Italian, and he sent it to Rome, and somebody gave it to the Pope, and the Pope sent them a secret letter that after he read this book, it doesn't give him rest. And shortly after, a few weeks later, he resigned. First time in history, I believe, that a Pope resigned in his job. You understand why? The evidence is so solid, you have to close your eyes and pretend you're blind to continue to follow it. There's so many human errors. Let me give you an example. So they were trying to prove that Joseph is a grandson of King David, and right after that, they said that Joseph is not the biological father. So that means JC is not the father of Joseph. JC cannot be Mashiach, cannot be the Messiah. Christianity is over before it started. On the first page, God confused them. The ones who faked that book, he already made them make such a critical mistake that every logical human being would see it right away. It would know not to waste a minute. Apparently, it doesn't work. Close to 2 billion people follow it. I'll give you another example. In the Torah, it said that Jacob went to Egypt with 70 people. Jacob and all his family, 70 people, the Torah say. In the New Testament, it say 75. What happened to God? He doesn't remember? It was 70? All of a sudden, 1,300 years ago, God gave part two and he forgot that he was 70, he became 75? It says in the New Testament, 75. Another mistake. It says in the Torah that Abraham Avinu bought the cave to bury his wife Sarah from a goy named Ephron Achiti. Goy means non-Jew. It's not a bad word, relax. So goy means a nation, actually. That's what it means in a holy language. Goy mean, it can be, by the way, the nation of Israel can also be called, it's called Goy Kadosh, holy nation. In the Torah, there's a verse. You are Goy Kadosh. Goy Kadosh means holy nation. And goy, it's any other nation. So it says that Abraham bought the cave from Ephron Achiti. In the New Testament, it became from Shechem ben Hamor, from a different person. In the Torah, it says that the cave is in the city of Hebron. And you still see, it's still there. Everybody sees it's in Hebron, big building there. In the New Testament, in Acts 7, in the end of the New Testament, it says that it's in the city of Shechem, Nablus. God doesn't know where the cave of Abraham and Sarah and Jacob and Leah and Yitzchak. He doesn't know where they buried. What happened? He forgot where the cave is. Do you understand how you examine a book, if it's divine or not? By the way, I only told you 4 or 5 mistakes. I have 400. But I don't want to ruin your night here. You came all the way. So let's move on to understand how you examine now the Torah. I opened the Torah today. I come to you. Let's pretend I am the messenger of God. Just pretend. Relax. And you are the nation that I have to convince to follow my leadership and to follow the book that supposedly God gave me. Right? So far, everything is clear. Now, when I give you the book, and you begin to read that there are 613 commandments. There's 10 commandments on the board, but they're only a small part from the Torah. That's 613 laws. When you begin to read the book, you're getting scared. You say, wow, so many things to keep. You're allowed, you're not allowed. Do this, do that. Oh, where this guy came from? What's the chance that all of you here would become right away religious? Oh, you did whatever you want until now. All of a sudden, somebody showed up by the door. He brought a book. God gave me the book. All of you have to follow it. And all of a sudden, history proves the whole nation became observant of the Torah. Until 220 years ago, it was impossible, almost, to find not religious Jews. Everywhere you went, all the communities were all religious. Everywhere. Check some history of the Jewish communities. Check the cookbooks with the black and white picture. Every picture they show in every nationality, they're all religious, all the women cover from 100 years ago, almost everyone was religious, especially in the Middle Eastern countries. And the European countries, until Moshe Mendelssohn, 220 years ago, everyone almost was observant. So the question is, for 3,100 years, almost all Jews were sticking to the laws. For instance, in Yemen, the Yemenite Jews, from the time they arrived to Yemen, more than 2,500 years ago, until today, there was never in the history of Yemen one Jew, until this moment, that wasn't observing the Sabbath. Never in the history of Yemen, until today, there was not one time a Jew that officially became publicly Mechalel Shabbat, a non-observant of the Sabbath. Never. Till today, there's few, another 100, 150 Jews left there. How do I know? When the Yemenites came to America, they came to my town, to Monsi. Satmer brought them in. And I asked them, I investigated them. So they looked at me like I'm not normal when I even asked these questions. It wasn't even an option. It was always around the shul, the rabbi, the mori. There's nothing else in our life. So the question is, why in every other country Jews betrayed the laws of the Torah and the laws of God, but all of a sudden we see that one country, nobody did that. Everyone stuck to the Torah. No one is perfect. Of course, I'm sure they made some sins here and there, but the main thing is that they stuck to the main laws. They never gave it up. And believe me, they didn't have such easy time. It's poverty and the Muslims were chasing them. So what is it? The answer, in my opinion, is the modern lifestyle in other countries always contradicting the Torah. When a person becomes too addicted to material lifestyle, slowly forget the obligations, what he has to do. He's not interested anymore. He's interested in all kinds of other things that the world has to offer. But over there, life was very simple. Look at the Yemenite food. Almost all the food is water and flour. Almost everything. Malawach, water and flour. Jachnun, water and flour. Fatut, water and flour. Why? There was such poverty. There's nothing to eat. The only thing you can do is make some flour and water and try to create with that. And they create beautiful food, a lot of food. But there was no luxury like other countries had, like the Jews in Iran had, or in Morocco, or in Iraq, or in Syria. It was luxury lifestyle. But over there, it was very down to earth, the life. That's why they stay the holiest nation until they left Yemen and they came to Israel. And unfortunately, maybe 80% of them, with the help of what's happening in Israel, left the Torah and left the mitzvot, unfortunately. But two generations ago, they were all in Yemen, 100%. So what's going on here? How a nation will become overnight observant of so many mitzvot? The answer is, let's analyze it one by one. When I give you the book, can I tell you in the book everything that happened to you in the last year and I will be able to fool you? Can I fool you and tell you what happened to you in the last year? Or you know what happened to you in the last year? You know, right? So if I give you a book and I said, God gave me the book, and you open the book and you begin to read and you see I'm the God that took you out of Egypt. You were slaves there, you suffer. I released you. I split the Red Sea. I took you out. The Egyptian who chased you, they drowned. And here you are receiving the Torah today. Now, if any one of these details were not accurate, what would you say? What is he talking about? What Egypt? I don't remember we were slaves in Egypt. I don't remember we went through the Red Sea, it split, we went through and the Egyptian drowns. What is he talking about? Who were slaves in Egypt? We just came from, from Japan. We were not in Egypt. Why are you selling us a story? So if I will be so brave to come to 3 or 5 or 10 million, there's different opinions how many millions, but minimum 3 million people, and it's plenty of witnesses. If I come to 3 million people and I say, I am the representative of God, he gave me this book, here is the book, follow it. And you open the book, and you read in a book that I took you out of Egypt with his help, and I made you 100 miracles. Of course, he's the one who makes all the miracles. So you begin to read. In Egypt, all the water became blood. Red. Happen or not? If it did not happen, one of you would raise his hand and say, excuse me, Mr. Moses, maybe you had a bad dream. I don't know where you bought this book from. But I don't remember that when we lived in Egypt, everything became blood. I was there. Here. Anyone saw blood? Right, the way they raised their hand. So we didn't see blood. It says in the book, we all saw blood. If one Jew didn't see blood in Egypt, the Torah will never start. They stone him to death. I'll explain to you why in a few minutes, why they'll stone him to death. You wouldn't even know Moshe existed, Moses. You wouldn't know. Why? You will understand in 5 minutes. Then they open the Torah, and they see that bread is falling from heaven, like rain, like snow. Instead of snow, it's look like man, like popcorn. You eat it, delicious. Wow, everyone is happy. Everywhere they pick it up. So now, if it doesn't happen, this miracle, they'll say, excuse me, what's this nonsense you brought us? It says that we're getting bread. We're killing ourselves to get bread. We're killing ourselves. We're working so hard. Are you telling us stories that the bread falling right by our hands? I will be that dumb to tell you such fairy tales and all of you would agree with my plan? It's not possible. How would I even be brave to tell you 100 miracles that are written in the Torah that you know, that I know it never happened to you? I'm only going to make myself look like a total fool. Even the dumbest person in the history wouldn't do such a thing. And we have to agree that Moshe wasn't dumb exactly, right? We see a brilliant person, but it gets even better. It says in the Torah, all of you heard me and God speaking. You heard the voice of God. This is what it comes down to. You heard or you did not hear? If you did not hear, you would say, excuse me, sir, what are you selling here? You're selling us a story. We are here already standing 10 hours. We didn't hear any voice of God. What voice? It says in the Torah, Moshe speaks, and God answers him with a voice. And we know there's a rule in the Torah, there's no extra word. Never. Every word has a deep meaning. So the oral Torah asks, what does it mean God answers him with voice? Of course, how would he answer him? The reason that it says it in a verse, God answers him with voice, that people today, the skeptic people today, they would say, oh, you know what happened over there? Moses stood in a hill, and he said, shh, let me hear what God is whispering to me. Shh, okay, dear God, no problem. Okay, he just told me you all have to observe the Sabbath. Okay, wait, shh. Oh, he told me from now on you have to eat kosher. No more pork, no more shrimps. Okay, what else? He can sell the whole story like that. If he wouldn't say in the Torah with voice and everyone hear and see the voice, not only hear, see the waves of the voice, then they will have a very serious problem. People would come and say, oh, of course, Moshe made a nice show. But everyone heard the voice of God. Now, if one Jew, one from the millions, did not hear the voice of God, the Torah would finish before it started. Why? Everyone else heard. So one didn't hear. Because it will be the first mistake in the Torah. The Torah says, Kol Ha'am, the entire nation. If mean 5, 10, 20, 50, or 100 did not hear, they would raise their hand and say, we also hear. And we didn't hear anything. And that would already create an argument. Say, hey, you say God gave you the book? Why God made such a mistake? Why, he doesn't know that some of us didn't hear his voice? Why he wrote, all of us heard the voice? But it gets even better. Moshe told them before to prepare food because it's going to be a holiday. Which holiday? Holiday of Shavuot. That's the holiday of receiving the Torah. We have a custom today, 3,300 years later, that every year we eat dairy food in Shavuot. Why is it? Why in other holidays we never eat dairy? All of a sudden, Shavuot, at least one meal or two are dairy. Why? The answer is, they all prepared meat. Moshe came down with the Torah, and they started to see the laws of kosher meat, and they see that the knife that they used to slaughter the animals, that wasn't according to the law of the Torah. They didn't sharpen the knife, they didn't check for bumps, they didn't cut in the right place, they didn't soak and salt the meat to get rid of all the blood, they didn't check the lung of the animals. There's laws. How do you check that the cow is kosher? You don't just come and stab it and eat it. But before the Torah was given, they didn't know how to do it. All of a sudden, Mr. Moshe comes down and he said to them, all the meat you prepared has to go to the garbage. There's only one problem. Today, when it happens, when you slaughter a cow and you find out that it's not kosher, you call Mustafa. Mustafa, bring your brother Ahmed, come take the cow, halal meat. Halal meat. That's what they do. Halal meat, they buy it from the shochatim, from the Jewish slaughtering, in a much lower price. At least they pay the price of raising the cow. You don't make profit, but at least you don't lose it. That's called halal meat. Why halal meat? Because the Muslims read in the written Torah that you have to slaughter the animal. You cannot shoot them or stab them. You have to slaughter them. But they don't have the oral Torah, which is the main Torah. That part they don't have. Why? God didn't want the nations to have the oral Torah. If we have time, I'll explain about it later. But they don't have that part. So therefore, they only stick to the literal meaning. Eye for an eye. Hand for an hand. They translate it literally. But it doesn't mean hand for an hand. If somebody stole $5 from you, you chop his head off. Like in Saudi Arabia or in Iran. That's not what it means. You have to go to the oral Torah and see what God meant. The way he wrote the Torah is very sophisticated and complicated. And he did not want to put all the laws in one book. Why? Because today no one in the world would know who is Jewish and who is not. There would not be a way to know. No one would know if my soul is Jewish or my soul is not Jewish. Why? Because if in a time when God gave the Torah, all the laws would be written in one book, the written and the oral, there was no oral. Everything is written. First of all, the size of the book was all the way from here to New York. The size of the book, because it's so many millions of things in the oral Torah, you have to add everything to one book. It's a very, very long book. Even today, when we try to do Akbaah, the Torah scroll, especially me, I'm almost falling. Imagine make it 10 times heavier now. You need 15 people to pick up the Torah, to bring it to read on the Shabbat. The entire minyan cannot pick up the Torah. Why? Because all the laws are inside. So it's not logical. Also, God did not want the nations to have all the secrets of his commandments. If everyone would have it, beard everyone had in those days, there was no Gillette yet, and everyone were covering their head, as you can see in old pictures from 2,000 years ago. So everyone dressed already more or less the same way. So now they come, and one person show up. Where you came from? I came from a place near Iraq. What's your name? He make up a name. And they all assume that he's Jewish. Why? They see he has tefillin, he has talit, he has Torah, he has mezuzot, he has everything. But he's not Jewish. But many of the Gentiles, once they saw the Jews receive the Torah, first thing in my mind was, I want to join this nation. The Torah says that many of them wanted to join, but the majority of their nation refused because they didn't know what's in it. So the Zohar, the Kabbalah, says that all these goyim, all these non-Jews who wanted to join the nation of Israel, but they were forced not to, they come back in reincarnation in new bodies in the future, and they have a chance to convert. That's why there's so many thousands of converts. And there's not one day I don't have at least 10 emails of Gentiles begging me to help them to convert. Every day. And that's not even seeing them face to face. Imagine how it goes. There's mamash millions of them. First of all, you should know, there's a big movement growing right now of Christians who live Christianity, and they stick to the seven laws of Noah. They call themselves Noachides. What does it mean? They already, through the lectures of me and many other rabbis, they started to see that really Christianity doesn't make any sense, full of human errors. And to be Jews, they cannot, because they need to convert, and it's not so simple. So what's really their purpose in life? The Torah says, the Gentiles has a share to the world to come. And one condition, what is it? They have to be righteous Gentiles. How do you become a righteous Gentile? Not by keeping the Sabbath or eating kosher. That's not their obligation. They have seven laws to believe in one God. Not two, not son of God, not sister, not brother, not the gods of the Greeks, none of this nonsense. One God only. Muslims keep this law. They believe in one God. Even they claim Muhammad, they claim he's a prophet, but they don't claim he's son of God or any other superpower. But the Christians have a very serious problem. Right away, they violate one of the seven laws, which you should believe and give the credit only to one creator, one God, nobody else. Second, you should not kill. Gentiles not allowed to murder. You should not steal. They're also not allowed to steal. They should not eat raw animals, which means they eat the animals before they're completely dead. It's called Ever Minachai. They should make themselves a system of courts and police as they wish. They make rules in every country and country, whatever the rules are, as long as it doesn't contradict their obligation in the Torah. And based on those rules, people have to obey the rules. Why? Because it has to be order. It cannot be everyone does whatever they want. They have to make an order in their society. So that's the fifth law. And then to respect God, to believe in one God, God forbid never to curse him, that's another one. And sex crimes with the relatives in the family, even though their sex crimes is not as severe as Jews, because by Jews is much more strict, but by them is also, homosexuality is not allowed, relation with animals, it's also a very big sin for the Gentiles. Also brother, sister, mother, father, the seven closest relative is not allowed. But for instance, if Chris and Christine met in a bar across the street here, and they like each other, and they want to move in right away, they have no sin. They can move in, they can have relation without marriage. There's no marriage by the Gentiles. The Gentiles are copying the Jews after they saw that the Jews have a ceremony that a man puts the ring on his wife and he has to buy her by giving her something valuable and she has to agree. And it's a really holy ceremony. And also if they decide to get divorced, so there is a way according to the Torah, one of the 613 laws is to do the divorce. As the Torah says, he has to give her a book to separate from her because the souls are connected. And only once she gets it to her hand, God is making the separations between them. And as long as she just separated from him and she moved to another place, she still belongs to that man. If she goes with someone else, a very, very big sin. So by them, you don't have all that. All the Christians' weddings, all the Muslims' wedding, all the things that they do, it's all, they decided to do it, but there's not an obligation for them. So if a Gentile male and female decided to move in together, they can live as a husband and wife without marriage. They don't need priests, they don't need witnesses, no nothing. However, if they want to cheat on each other, they're not allowed. Once they're together, it's known that they belong to each other, even though without marriage, they're not allowed to cheat. They want to go with someone else, they have to decide to break up. As soon as they decide and they announce that they break the relationship, everyone can go with whoever he wants. By them, it's not sin. So they can live all their life, do whatever they want, basically, when it comes to these things. And they did not make sins. But a Jew, if he wants to have a woman to live with him intimately, must marry her first. You understand? So we have laws here. We see that the laws of the Jews are different than them. But they have seven laws. Also, besides the seven laws, they have to be decent, which means not everything is written in their seven law. But I have to be decent citizen. They cannot make anyone angry. They cannot make noise. They cannot make the place dirty. They have laws that are logical. Every laws that is logical, they also bind to keep. Which brings it all together to about 35, 36 laws that the Gentiles have to keep. If they keep it, they have a share to the world to come. Many Jews, unfortunately, they don't have a share to the world to come. Every Jew is born with a share to the world to come. The main world is the afterlife. I have a whole lecture here, Life After Death. It's 2.5 hours film. with scientific evidence that the real life begins only in the time of death. The real story will begin by then. Right now, it's only preparation to materialize the ticket that we were born with. But just because you're born to a Jewish mother and you're born with a ticket doesn't mean you will materialize it. What is it like? You went and bought expensive ticket to a concert of some high society style singer. You go to a place, you pay hundreds of dollars for the ticket, and in the back of the ticket, in small print, it say no jeans, no sneakers, no this, no that. They have a list over there, but you didn't pay attention. So you came with shorts, sneakers, you just finished your basketball game, you showed up to the concert, to the opera building, and the guy over there say, what's this? Say, yeah, I came with my girlfriend here, look. He looks, so yeah, I know, I see you, but I'm sorry, I can't let you in. Well, what's the problem? I bought the ticket. Yes, you have the ticket. But in the back of the ticket, there are conditions. If you fulfill the conditions, I allow to let you in. But now, since you violated the conditions, you lost your share to the concert. That's exactly how it is. A Jew is born with a ticket for life of eternity full of pleasures. Spiritual pleasure, not stupid pleasure of 5 minutes here and there like we run after in this world. It's a pleasure that you cannot even describe in words to a human being while he's in this world. The Gemara says, all the punishment of the wicked people for the afterlife, it's all described in details. But when it comes to the reward, only a few sentences. Not that much. Why? Should have been equal. He's speaking about all the punishments of the wicked people. Now speak about all the reward of the righteous people. Why only 3-4 sentences? The answer is, it cannot be understood by people. Let me give you an example. If you take a blind person and you try to explain to him how the color blue looks, he never saw colors. He was born blind. So you tell them, you know, this beautiful color blue. He asks, what is this? He says, you know, it's similar a little bit to green. So what's green? So it's like the sun, it's like the sky. What's the sky? It's very relaxing. What does it mean, relaxing? What are you going to say to a blind person who never saw blue? Is there any way to describe it to him? All you have to do is to open his eye for 1 second, show him blue, and make him blind again. Now you don't have to. You understand the point. Or any other color. So the Torah say when the soul is in the body, anyway a person cannot understand things that are pure, 100% spiritual. You can have a touch of it, but you don't understand what it is. So there's no point of wasting time. But what does the Torah say? I'll tell you, what does it say? And you decide if it's paid to do it or not. One is the righteous people have a special crown and they sit and enjoy the greatness of God. What does it mean? I have no idea. But one thing I do know, nothing in this world comes even near it. They sit and enjoy the greatness of God. If in this world there's such great pleasures, but even in this world, an hour here, half an hour there, a day there, imagine what's the pleasure that comes directly to the soul, like a direct download into your soul from the creator of the universe. But it gets even better. The Torah says, if you take all the pleasures of all the people from the time the world was created until the end of time, of all the people, 7 billion people in the world, take all their pleasures from A to Z, add it together. What? Vacations, food, money, jewelry, clothing, women, swimming, sports, whatever you can think of. Take everything combined. Of all the people of their entire life combined will not be equal to 1 hour of the reward of a Jewish righteous person in the afterlife. I repeat, in case you're not understanding what I'm saying. Take 7 billion people, record all the pleasures they have in their lifetime, 70, 80 years they live, take all the pleasures they have, moments of happiness, tears of happiness, swimming, playing, vacation, relaxation, whatever they had. Add everything combined, multiply by all the generations from the time God created the world until now, add everything to a huge mountain of pleasure. It cannot even reach 1 hour of the soul in the afterlife. יפה שעה אחת של קורת רוח בעולם הבא מכל חיי העולם הזה. 1 hour of pleasure and satisfaction in the afterlife is greater than this entire world combined. This is a verse. That's it. Once it's written, you don't have nothing to worry. And by the way, God is not a member in Congress, and also not in the Israeli Knesset. Before the election, they promise a lot. As soon as the election is over, they say, who? Who are you? Remind me? What do you mean remind you? I just gave you $3 million for all your campaign. I'm sorry. Call me tomorrow. I'm busy. What happened? He forgot after the election. By God, it's not like that. If he promises, he keeps his promises. Now let's go back. 80,000 religions and cults, they all claim they have the truth. Each one of them cannot prove even one detail in their religion. You cannot prove if it ever happened. They never have witnesses how it started. None of them have witnesses that God spoke to them. The Torah promised, this is what the Torah promised. This is what the Torah said to the Jews. Kishalna leyamim rishonim. Go check in the history. Did ever a group of people heard the voice of God speaking to him from the fire with miracles, with a strong hand, as I did to you here? No one in the history will ever claim that I spoke to them besides you, my children. Now, I want to explain to you what it says here. It doesn't say that God will not speak to the goyim. It says that the goyim will never claim, not that they, if he spoke to them or not, they can claim whatever they want. They can lie. The Torah says, not only that I'm not going to speak to them, I will make sure they will never claim that I spoke to them. Who will claim? One individual. Muhammad by himself. Mary by herself. Buddha by himself. But never a group of people. Why? Because if a person comes and he says, you know what just happened? I saw a UFO is landing, lots of light in the sky. One person you don't take so serious. But if 100 came from all directions and they all claim the same thing, you run outside right away. Why when one came you didn't pay attention, but when 100 came you ran to the street to see? Because the more witnesses are coming, the more solid is the event, no? It's very hard to deny hundreds of witnesses. If the Gentiles would come and say, God spoke to us here and there, even if they lie, but 50 of them would come and say, you know, we just saw the light, it came, we all fell on the floor. They make up a beautiful Hollywood movie. It would already create a serious conflict in life. Why? Because the Torah says, if witnesses come and they claim, you cannot ignore it. It would create a conflict. In order for us not to have this conflict, God made sure it will never happen. 80,000 times one individual came. Not one of them thought to bring a bunch of friends to back him up. Muhammad couldn't bring 5, 6 of his cousins that they all swear that the angel gave him the Quran. Why he didn't do such thing? It would be a lot more convincing. You wouldn't have to kill all the people. They would run to you. If 6, 7 people would come and claim, you know, the angel came with his wings and we all fell and they all learned it by heart. He gave them a script. They all read all week. Now they know it by heart. Muhammad is testing them from morning to night. Everyone knows the story. Finished. Now they come. They're very convincing. Why didn't do it? The answer is, when you bribe witnesses to come and tell what you want them to tell, you are always in their hand forever. They can always blackmail you. Oh, Muhammad, you promised that you're going to give me a land. Oh, you didn't give me a land? Okay, I'm telling the media that you all bribed us. You can never have control anymore. You always depend what they're going to say next. And if they're all going to die, it will be very suspicious. All 6 witnesses died? All 10 witnesses died? Something is not right here. That's why I didn't want to take risks. But that was a part of God's plan. So far, any questions about what we said? Yes.
I've only got 50 questions.
I'm here. Go ahead.
All my life, number one, you said Jesus was born Jewish and died Jewish.
They said but in their books.
I've always understood that he was baptized at 12.
No. So what does it mean, baptized? If a Jew now is baptized, do you think he stopped being a Jew? There's no. It's not a choice to stop being a Jew. A Jew can join any cult he wants. A Jew can accept any religion he wants. He will never stop being a Jew. That's besides the point. But How do you know what happened with him if the people who wrote the books never even saw who he was? Think about it. It started between 70 to 300 years after he died, according to their, admitting that none of them really saw him. They have pictures of him with long hair and all these things. How do you know? I have news for you. You'll be very surprised. There is a very, very serious doubt if JC even existed. Very, very big serious doubt if there was any person like this ever. Why? There is a story in a Gemara about somebody by this name that learned in yeshiva and got kicked out of yeshiva, but there's no guarantee that it's the same person. Plus, this story of a virgin giving birth appears in other religions, other cultures, other nations way before Christianity. Way! It's already, the story was well known in the world. So it's very possible that this is another, like the Greek mythology. You know, they copy from here, from there, and all of a sudden you have a religion. And by the way, you should know, Christmas and New Year's Eve, they didn't have it in Christianity. Only 300 years later, they started it. They saw it's too boring, there's no holidays. So they decided, what we're going to do? Let's make a birthday to Jesse. Exactly like that. Check the history, Google it. It didn't start from Christianity right away. It came only hundreds of years later. So what happened? They didn't know until now the birthday of JC. Now they remember now? Go ahead.
I work in a work environment that's very painful. Friday I have an all day out of the office agency meeting. They bring the Bible on stage. They're reading scriptures in my business meeting. I'm offended. I'm constantly in pain over this. A woman in my office comes up to me a month ago. Gary, how do you expect to go to heaven if you're not a follower of Christ? I'm in a very Southern Baptist environment.
Yeah.
How is it that 2 billion people have bought this story?
Next time in a meeting, you show this film to all of them, and I promise you, they're never going to dare to talk to you after that. I promise you this. Here, that's my gift to you. After that, the argument is over. You know what the priest said in the end of here? Have patience. In the last 10, 15 minutes, he said, you put me in a hole. I don't know how I'm going to dig myself out of there. I say to him, I just proved to you Christianity is a false man-made religion. He didn't say no. He said, but my heart does not let me leave it. He's already speaking about leaving it. It was too good to me over the years. Of course, he makes millions. Being professor, teaching it in a university in Manhattan, it's very hard to leave it. What is he going to be now, anonymous?
All right, I have one last question, yeah, because I know others have questions.
You finish your 50 pretty quick.
You said something shocking about the Pope resigning.
Yes.
Why has nobody in the media picked that up, that he could no longer be the Pope?
Do you think he's interested that the media will know about it? We only know, you know how I know about it? From Rav Yaakov Ades himself. It's not from the media. It's not something the media know. Maybe 20, 30 people knows about it. It's not something that was published. One day will be published. But it's not only him. I had a priest in a church with 5,000 priests. 5,000. One day he sends me an email. I still have all these emails. I keep them. He sends me an email. He said, listen, I watched your debate with the priest, and that was a very big shock for me. And then I watched your other film, Torah and Science, which is right here. Also 4 hours Jewish seminar with all the proofs that the written and the oral Torah is divine. And there's life after death, and the difference between us and them. Many, this is a very, very precious CD. Very, very important CD. So after he watched those two, now he knows Christianity is false. But he has 5,000 students under him in Ukraine. What does he do now? So he begins to listen to my lectures. And then he comes to the church and he gives them my lecture. My yesterday lecture, today he writes it and he gives them. All of a sudden he became a very popular priest. Where are you bringing all these things? They don't know oral laws, midrashim. All of a sudden he tells them stories. They're all in shock. So now he writes to me, what do you suggest I'll do? I'll be an insider here and slowly, slowly get them away from JC, tell them to focus on God, or I just take my family and ride away because or run away, because if they will only know I'm communicating with a rabbi and they only know I'm interested in Judaism, they will kill us in a minute because they are the biggest anti-Semite in history. This is his words. He said they cannot stand Jews over here. 5,000 monks, Nazirim, they are, as soon as they hear the word Jew, they go crazy. Just like the Nazis. Mamash, that's how he described. So if they only know I have a connection to a Jew, they'll kill me and my whole family with no hesitation. That's what he says. So what did I say to him? I said to him, it doesn't matter what I'll tell you. When a person discovers the truth, it's very difficult to live in a lie. Well, you know, everything you preach is all a lie. It's very difficult. Even me, you know, when I learn, I read a lot of books. Not all the books in the world are reliable. Sometimes you read a book and it makes a big impression on you. And then 2 years later, you find out that it's not exactly as it was. Somebody made it a little bit prettier than what it was. From that moment on, I cannot ever repeat it in my lecture. Once I discovered that the details there were not 100%, the books that people write today are not as reliable. We're not talking the Torah. The Torah is divine. You cannot take one letter out of the Torah. The Torah has 304,805 letters. All the Jewish Torahs in the world, everyone wanted to destroy them. Everyone was after the Torah to burn it, to destroy it, to bury it. All the empires who came to destroy Judaism and the temple and the Torah, they're all gone from the face of the earth. The Greeks, the Babylonians, the Persians, the Romans, the Philistines, and many other nations, they're all gone, and the Jews are always rising somehow with the same exact Torah. Not only that, when the Jews gathered together in Israel about 80 years ago, 60 years ago, they started to bring Torahs from all over the world, from Iraq, from Syria, from Iran, from Poland, from Russia. Every shul you go, same Torah, Bereshit bara Elokim. The New Testament, do you know how many versions they have? How many? More than 200,000 different texts. So now, this is what I said to the priest in a debate. I said to him, you know what? Let's assume God really gave you the New Testament. Let's assume. And when I see 200,000 copies and nobody knows which one was the first one, the original, what is it like? Like, I have a diamond that it's 100 carat. It's worth $100 million. A very special pink diamond. No one in the world has such thing. You all know I'm here. I'm coming here today to Houston to present this amazing diamond in front of you. So what did you do? You went to Russia to a lab, and you ordered the exact fake diamond. The Russian fake diamonds are really, really looks good. It's very hard to tell, even to professionals. So you prepare the exact diamond, exactly, but fake. Just when I presented my diamond, all of you rised and threw your diamonds at me. I got nervous. My diamond fell on the floor. Now there's 100 diamonds on the floor. Now, each one of them, I don't know which one is the original. A minute ago, I had $100 million. Now, everyone I picked up, does it worth anything? Would you put $100 million on it? So I said to him, even if God gave you a book, it's gone. There's no way to know because every book is different. And it's alteration. Once one letter you erase from the Torah, it's not holy anymore. Cannot read in it. You can throw it in a suitcase. You saw the suitcase I brought with the CDs. That's how you can put the Torah. And they throw it with El Al. They throw it. Why? Because one word is missing. One word is missing. It's human. It's not divine. Divine, it's perfect. One letter is gone. So what's happening here? Same thing Quran. Hundreds of different Quran. Quran in Iran, different than the one in Kuwait. The one in Kuwait, different than the one in Saudi Arabia, different than the one in Israel. Different Qurans, different dates, different names, different grammar. I tell you even better than that. Muhammad had four wives. Each one of them had a different Quran in his lifetime. Google, the wives of Muhammad. Four different Qurans in his lifetime. Muhammad didn't know how to read and write. Did you know that? They admit he did not know how to read and he did not know how to write. From all the people in the world, God would choose such an ignorant to give his knowledge from? Doesn't know how to read? Not only that, if God wanted the Messiah to come to the world, does he need to make the Messiah a mamzer, an illegitimate boy? Why would he go to a married woman and make her pregnant? It's against the law. The Torah says if a person brought a baby from a married woman, this is a mamzer, illegitimate boy, cannot marry anyone. He loses holiness, he's excluded from the community. Why he would come to a married woman? Come to a single one. You understand? So many ridiculous things, and people believe. By us, there's no believing, you should know. The Torah doesn't claim to the Jews you should believe in God. Only you should know God. Ve'adata ayom, and you should know today that all the nations should know that I'm your God. I chose you, the Jews, from all the nations to be my children. I don't give you permission to be like them. I don't give you permission to intermarry, to marry other nations. Even the worst Jew in history, the worst Jew, murderer, rapist, liar, thief, robber, whatever you want. And the most righteous Gentile in history, such as Eov, the prophet, and other prophets that the Goyim had, righteous, decent Gentile. And the worst despicable Jew in history, the Jew is not allowed to marry the Gentile. Not allowed. It's against the law of the Torah. The Torah says, I separated you from all the nation. It's not in your hand. You don't have permission. What did we do? We didn't listen to this law. We started in the same generation like the Chinese people 4,200 years ago after the flood of Noah. 4,200 years ago, the world was destroyed. Everyone died. After everyone died, Noah came from the ark with his three sons and the wives, eight people. The world started. What does it say right there? That Shem is the son of Noah, the righteous one. He's the founder of us, the Jews. The Jews came from Shem. Someone who hates Jews, his name is anti-Semite. Why? Because we came from the descendants of Sem, which was the righteous boy of Noah. The other two were not righteous. Sem was the uncle of the Sini, Viola de Tassini. Shem, our grandfather, was the uncle of the Chinese. The Chinese are 1.5 billion with restriction on birth. Jews never had restriction on birth, only 13.2 million. We should have been 3 to 4 billion easy. How come we only 13 million? The answer is intermarriage. We betrayed our creator, and we went after our desires, and we did whatever we want. Now, there's another reason for it. We are the only nation who are having strict, severe laws and punishments on how we behave. For instance, in Israel, the rain is depend on the behaving of the people. But in America, doesn't behave. In New York, every week, plenty of rain, no problem. The whole rest of the world, it's nature. In Israel, what does it say in the Torah? If you don't listen to me and get me angry, I'll stop the rain, I'll stop the heaven. There's not going to be rain, and chas v'shalom, people would starve to death after that. So we see that the rain in Israel and the way the Arabs around us behave with us, it's all the hand, the whip of God to help us to come closer to the covenant that he should give us life of eternity. But we complain. Instead of appreciate that he sent us policemen to help us to come to the right track, we only complain. Last question for today, please. Any other questions I can answer after, but any other questions about what we say, about what we didn't say? Everything is clear.
I was just trying to compliment or say something about what you said about the Pope. When the news just came out, it was said that he wrote a book saying the marriage, she was never a virgin. And the kings that came to receive Yeshua, they never exist. And such a lot of things that he disclosed that it never happened. And that's why he was saying.
You know what? Any Christian who come and deny the part of Christianity, it's blessed because the entire thing, it's not authentic and not real. So if you have 100% of false man-made book and you disqualify 10% of it, it's better than nothing. Reality-wise, none of it is authentic. Not one word from the New Testament came from God. There's a very big doubt if JC ever existed. The New Testament is full of hundreds of human error. It said that JC was hungry with his student. They didn't have what to eat. So they saw a tree far away. And they say, what are we going to do? Maybe the tree has figs. tree. It was a fig tree. So they went for about 10, 15 minutes all the way to the tree, and they came, and the tree, it did not have figs. So JC kicked the tree. It wasn't the season. It wasn't the season of the figs. So he kicked the tree. That's in the New Testament. And he cursed the tree. You should never give your fruit ever again. What kind of son of God is this? He doesn't know God made the laws that 6 months of the year you have fruit, 6 months of the year the tree needs to rest. What is he cursing the tree? A lot of ridiculous things like kindergarten, mamash, in the level of first grade. The more I talk to you about the New Testament, the more you get convinced. But I didn't come to waste my time on this. I just wanted you to appreciate the Torah, how beautiful and divine it is, and how you have thousands of proofs, if you watch my Torah and Science film, that the Torah is 1,000,000,000% divine, everything. And the more you're going to get involved with that, the more you keep the laws, the happier you'll be in this world, and for sure in life of eternity. Thank you very much. We'll see you again.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Mizrachi. Rabbi Mizrachi will be here to answer any questions. Everyone's welcome to enjoy these CDs, no pushing. The video will be available, the video and recording of tonight's class lecture will be available on divineinformation.com.
Yes.
And on torchweb.org. I'll get it up before you. torchweb.org, I'll try to put it up tonight so you can have it tomorrow. You can share it with your friends. We'll put it on Facebook. Everyone is also invited to join Rabbi Mizrachi on Facebook.